Welcome to another episode of Invigorate Your Business with George Strombolis. Today, I sit down with an entertainment industry veteran by the name of Patricia Cara. She is an expert on all levels. She's an actress, TV presenter, has appeared in commercials, TV shows, game shows, and you may recognize her from the hit TV show Deal or No Deal as Case Number 9. She recently published her own book that gives tips about everything in the entertainment industry, what you need to be successful, profitable, and to present yourself well for a long career in this space. So get ready as we sit down with Patricia on this episode.
My name is George Strombolis, and I'm extremely passionate about traveling the world, meeting new people, and learning about new businesses. Join me as I sit down with other entrepreneurs to learn about their journeys. This episode of Invigorate Your Business starts now.
So we're going to jump into this right now.
Let's do it.
I am sitting here with an industry veteran in the entertainment space, right? Actress, model, presenter, has done everything for several years. Right?
A long time.
A long time, right? Patricia Cara, she has been on TV shows, sitcoms, commercials, presenter on, you know, famous Deal or No Deal. We'll get into all that. And an author of an amazing book called Dream On,
Now
Deliver.
Thank you.
I actually read it. And I got a lot
of it. I love that you read
it. I really did. Yeah. It was a flight from New York back. And I'm like, I need to get into this, but we're going to cover a lot of topics, but please, okay. Give us an update. Like, who are you?
Oh my gosh.
What have you been doing? It's a loaded question, but.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a jack of all trades. I do a little bit of everything. I started in the modeling world when I was a teenager, but that expanded over time. I loved learning everything that was going on entertainment wise. So got into acting, as you said, hosting. I love the hosting world. I managed some people. I produced my own fitness DVD with a couple of the Deal Girls, actually. Pitch shows for a while. That's something a lot of people don't know. I had a few show ideas. I actually pitched it to Howie, who for a year we went out with one of my ideas. So a little bit of everything. I feel like I'm up for anything and everything.
Right.
If it seems exciting and it suits me, I'm like, hey, let's try this. Why not? I like expanding my world.
Absolutely.
And I like both sides of the camera. I don't have to be on camera. I love being behind the scenes and working with people. And I'm a great connector. I love connecting people. So that's definitely something innate in me that I've always done for a long time.
For a long time.
Yeah. Hence why I wrote the book.
Hence why. And we're going to jump into this. But talk to me. So your career has been out here in California, Hollywood, but originally from Chicago.
Yeah, started in Chicago when I was 15, 16, didn't know what I was doing. So I started there, pulled out the yellow pages and started cold calling agencies and just asking everybody the questions of how do I get started? It was very intimidating, but I learned a lot. And from there, I went to Florida, went to New York, and then eventually LA. And now I have moved again after 25 years of being in California, and I'm going back to basics, really. I'm following my own book advice, really, because I'm now in Florida, starting with new people, new agencies, new casting directors. So it's kind of fun and exciting to go back in time and start all over in a different way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So business podcast, right? We talk about business, whatever arena it is, right? So this book for people, it's a guide. It's a very hands-on guide on everything from A to Z to be in this industry and not just become famous. It's not even about that. It's about developing a career. What do you need to do to be profitable, to make this a career? So it doesn't apply to someone who just wants to be an actress or an actor or whatever. Like, it applies to business as well, right? There's
Absolutely.
Lessons on, you know, PR etiquette, finding the right agents, plural, right? It's not just one size fits all.
And that's a lot of people think it is one agent, but
right.
It's not. You're right.
Yeah.
And sorry to cut you off.
No. But, and then what I loved about it was so easy to read because you had your experience, your advice. And then at the end of every chapter and every topic, you would highlight, you know, you should do this, and this, where it's like, cool. Thanks for the recap. So I thought it was just an amazing read and stuff that we could apply in the business world as well. So talk to me, how do you go about even writing a book? Why did you want to start this? You know, what's that process like?
Honestly, I'm not a writer, and that's something that just wasn't in my mind for the longest time. A friend of mine, when I lived here in LA for a couple of years, planted that seed and said, you know, you have a lot of knowledge with, you know, all your experience and agencies and the business in general. He's like, you really should write a book. And I thought, you're absolutely crazy. There's no way I could talk, but I can't write. But over time, I started jotting notes. And over time, when I was meeting people in auditions and they needed help and they were newbies and they would ask me questions, or even if they didn't ask and I saw that they needed information, right, I was happily giving it to them, which I know a lot of people don't operate that way. Everybody's competitive and they want to keep their information to themselves and their contacts to themselves. I feel like there's enough for everyone. So I felt comfortable with, hey, I can help you, and I hope, you know, more power to you if you book this or if you get that out of this.
That because you were confident in your own abilities and like what
I
you were doing?
I felt good. Yeah, I just knew how hard it was for me, and I wish people had helped me when I started. That I thought, why would I not help somebody else? This is something I wanted and I needed that I didn't get, right. So I'm gonna do that for somebody else and save them the trouble, because it is a tough business. And especially being in LA, more so than New York or Chicago and anywhere else, I feel like LA was the toughest out of all the places I lived and worked. So if I could save somebody from being scammed or, you know, those difficult times or those difficult, whatever the case may be, I'm happy right, to help them get through that and think about all the things that could come into play that they should be aware of, save them the time and trouble and maybe even money, because there are a lot of scams that go on.
Right.
So, and then once I was on Deal or No Deal, people started approaching me even more than they did before. I would get approached like, how do you get started? And so by the time Deal came around, it was just such a regular question that I thought, I need to put all this information in a book. And it took me forever to finally get to that point. I would say it was like 20 years in the making,
25.
And the last few years is when I finally said, okay, enough. I need to do this and get that. I'm tired of saying one day I'm going to write a book. So I started following through on those steps. I'm like, girl, get it together and start helping people.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so you just launched this year. Right. 20 years
Correct.
In the making.
Yes.
Finally get it together.
Yeah.
Over 20 years, like what you went through, is it a different world 20 years later, or do these rules still apply to get into the space?
Some rules still apply. But the business is always evolving. So you have to think about it. I mean, even auditions, I talk about that in the book. That's evolved with COVID itself. Like, you do the self-tapes. Now everybody is all about the self-tapes, even though everybody's gone back to, you know, most people have gone back to the office. Not everybody has in the casting world. So now you do the self-tapes, and that's our world now. Okay. Sometimes they'll have meetings. It's very rare that you can go and audition in person.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that changed a lot during COVID. Before COVID, there were self-tapes, but it was once in a blue moon. Now that's the norm.
So audition, typically you go in and there's a table of producers, casting directors, all this stuff.
Correct. Well, the initial, when you do your first audition, it's you and the casting director.
Okay. One-on-one camera.
One-on-one. Okay. The callbacks, if you're lucky enough to make the cut for the next round, then it's producers, directors, whoever else, okay, the clients, depending on which area you're working, whether it's commercials, film, TV, whatever it is. All of a sudden, there are more people in the room, and you're auditioning for a slew of people. So that's changed now. There are some callbacks that they do in person, but now they even do it through Zoom. So it evolved.
Is that like cheating? Like, can you really deliver? It's different seeing someone.
It's hard. Right? I personally like the old school way. I personally like being in a room and being face to face with somebody. Right. I think there's only so much you can do on camera. It's just not as personable. I know it saves people a lot of time and money and driving to the audition, getting, you know, there are a lot of things. There's good and bad to everything.
Absolutely.
But personally, I'm old school and I love that way. And I wish we would go back to that, but I get it. You got to evolve with the times. You've got to do what you've got to do.
Absolutely. So this book is dedicated to your mother, which is amazing,
yes,
right? So you did that, you wrote it, you brought it out here. Have you already heard back from people who are trying to get in the industry? Like, what's the feedback you're getting already about the advice?
I've been getting a lot of good feedback, and even people from people that are not in the entertainment space, that they're like, oh, I can apply this in my business world.
Totally.
And it can be applied to your personal life too. I talk about rejection. I talk about self-image. I mean, rejection, we all go through it all the time. Yes. In our personal lives and our professional lives. Even after you have an agent and you even book the job, you get some form of rejection day to day, and it's how you deal with it. It's how you frame it in your mind over time. You have to really think about it and go, sometimes it has nothing to do with you. It's, there are other factors that you don't understand. You don't know what's going on in the cast, on the casting side of yes. things. So it may have nothing to do with you. And sometimes you think it's rejection and it's not. I've had auditions where I didn't book it, but down the line, those same casting directors, agents, or clients remembered me for something else. I just wasn't right for this.
Right.
But it showed itself down the line. So people forget, and I think we get in our heads quite a bit. There's a lot of self-doubt. There's a lot of fears. And sure. I get it. We all have it. But at some point, you need to realize, look, do your best and keep moving forward and not harp on those situations. You're like, why didn't I get it? Oh my God, I could have done it better. I could have. We're all guilty of it. But over time, you get a little stronger, yeah. a little bit better, a little bit more confident. And that takes practice like anything else.
Absolutely.
So it's building upon that and just always keeping your eyes on the ball and just keep going forward.
You had shared a story about a casting director. You went in, you got rejected, and you're like, F it. Next week, you went back in for something else. I had heard this story, but like, have you always had that I'm going to succeed attitude? Like, was that your upbringing? Like, where do you have that confidence, or is it fake confidence until you make it? Like,
interesting. I think I got a lot of that from my mom. My mom was a very, very strong woman and just did what she had to do. And I think that's where I got it. To be honest, I think that's where it came from. I never really thought about it until I wrote this book. I started really going back. I'm always about moving forward, but sometimes you do have to look back to see where you came from and why you are who you are and the totally. Things you do. And I've been doing more of that since my mom's passing and this book. The book came together during the time I was with her towards the end, and it all kind of came together. So I think she gave me the strength I needed my whole life. There were times where I would think, oh, this is so tough. How am I going to get through this? And then I thought, here's my mother who came from Greece, didn't know the language. She was a single woman, abandoned, abused, and came here and raised three daughters on her own. And I'm like, if she could do all that, my problems are trivial. Like mine, I can get through these little things that I think are such a big problem. So I would look at things that way from that lens.
Yeah, she's a hero. Like, are you kidding me?
So it really, I would have to remind myself, because I mean, we all love to complain about all kinds of things. But over time, I was like, what are you complaining about? Like, your mother's struggles were a whole different thing. You can get through this. This is nothing. And so that would actually drive me over time. It really helped me and my mindset to go power through and just keep going.
Right.
And figuring it all out.
Absolutely. So you're 15 when you got into this industry. I have three young daughters, right? And when they start getting to that age, if I have a 15-year-old daughter coming to me and say, Dad, I want to be an actress, right? Or I want to be on TV. Like, obviously, I'm going to support anything that makes sense. And you're going to put, like, when you're 15, how did you even know that's what you wanted to do? And then you go and grab like the yellow pages. So to the younger listeners who just Google what yellow pages were.
It's the Google of back then.
Yeah. Physically had to go and find, but like, how did you know that's what you wanted to do? Like at 15.
So when I was 4 or 5 years old, people used to ask me, what do you want to do? And I always would answer, I want to be a singer and a dancer. Like I just, that was, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a performer. I wanted to be in the arts. I didn't know it was the arts, but I was a performer as a kid. I can't sing to save my life. I did end up dancing over time down the line. I went to school for dance and theater.
Okay.
But by my early teens, I would see magazines of like Kathy Ireland and Rachel Hunter and Christy Turlington, Cindy Crawford. And I was like, wow, I want to do that. But it wasn't about like the fame of it all. It was about like, I just knew I wanted to be an entertainer. And I didn't know what that all meant until I looked into it more and more. And the more I did look into it, the more I was fascinated. And I was the class clown at times too. And at home, I would be the one to make my mom and my sisters laugh. That was me. And I just, it was always a very natural thing. So it just grew from there. And, I, like I said, I didn't know anybody in the business. So I had to, you know, where else do you go? But that's what we had was the Yellow Pages. And I looked up agencies and would just cold call. And it was very intimidating and got a lot of rejection. But, over time, I started thinking about it. I'm like, of course, I'm going to get a no, but eventually I'm going to get that yes.
Oh, you already had that
like,
mindset.
In my mind, over time, it just got stronger. Initially, I would it would take me about 10, 15 minutes to even pick up the phone to dial because I would have these conversations in my head of how it would go. And it would scare the hell out of me.
Right.
But then I kept working on that. And the more you start making the calls, the more comfortable you are. And then you learn for the next time. You're like, okay, the next time I make that phone call and if they say this or that, what is my response going to be? So I would just practice and do it over and over and keep going. And that helped. And then when I moved to Florida and eventually New York, New York was great for me. New York was a whole different feeling. The business was different. And I actually, at that point, I built that muscle that I could take rejection and I got rejected and I would still go back.
How many years into like making the decision?
So, I ended up going to New York about 24.
Okay.
And honestly, there were times I would call an agent and they'd be like, no, actually the one guy I remember was so rude to me on the phone. And he's like, no, you have to be this height. You have to be this, you have to be that. And I was like, okay, when are your open calls? Cause you could go in for a time frame to meet with the agents. I hung up the phone and I was like, all right, I'm going to show up to the office because I feel like face to face is a different thing. You can tell me whatever you want on the phone. Walked into his office. We hit it off. He ended up taking me on. I ended up booking quite a bit with him and built this relationship and this friendship with this person that totally blew me off on the phone. It was actually very rude. So,
which most people would have buckled under that and be like, all right, on to the next.
And that's when New York taught me to just really power through.
Yes.
I had a little bit of that in Chicago and Florida, but New York really, like, I really got into it and I was very focused and I was not going to let anything get in my way. At this point, I'd been doing it long enough that I was like, all right, we got this. We're going to, this is for the long haul. This is longevity for me. This is what I'm going to always do. I don't know anything else. I don't want to do anything else. This feels good. So I just had that frame of mind. And that's what kept me going. And then when I moved to LA, I was like, oh, I have New York under my belt.
Yes.
I had this confidence, like I got this.
Yeah.
Well, it was a different
right.
Coming to LA.
How so?
So in New York, you could just jump right in. I felt like, and you're booking stuff, you're auditioning all the time. It was nonstop. But by the time I came to LA, it takes a couple of years to really get people to know you. Like they want to build a relationship with you. They, whether it's with agents, casting directors, it's a process. It is a long process.
Versus just straight to the point.
And yeah. New York, you've got that boom, boom, boom. LA, it's like, all right, let's take the time to get to know who you are and see if you're bookable and see if you're this, if you're that. So it was a process. And I was like, okay, I'm really starting over. That was a little tough for me, but it was like, okay, start over. Let's do it.
So what, okay. So you move out here, you're an actress, you're getting gigs at this time, commercials and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing to supplement income? Like at that time, were you doing odd jobs to like support her or were you always in the
always state? Entertainment, always.
Get out of here.
And even if it was something that wasn't necessarily, I kept like in New York, I lived doing commercials, prints, TV, on the weekends, instead of being a, you know, a bartender or a waitress, cause that would be an epic fail. I know myself in the klutz that I am. I worked at a school teaching girls how to model and how to act. And I loved it because I love kids. I love the entertainment side of things. So it's like, great. I combine both my worlds and it's still entertainment. And that's, to me, I was like, whatever entertainment wise I can do, I will do. I wanted to be immersed in that space.
Right.
I didn't want to, it wasn't a hobby for me. It was, this is my business. And that's it. And I know a lot of people come into it thinking they want the glitz, they want the glamour. And it can be that, and we have moments of that, but it's a business.
It's a business.
If you want to longevity, and if you want to be in this business, you have to think of it as a business. And I think people are caught up with all the, you know, the starry-eyed, all the, you know, all the hoopla that comes along, with, which is great. Again, you have moments of that. And I've been able to do a lot of cool, amazing, fun things because of the work I do. And that's great. But there is the other side of it. You have to think about the business to keep going.
Yeah. And that's what I love what you covered in your book on. First of all, congrats, because you always hear, I'm an actress, and it's okay, where are you bartending, or where? And no offense to actresses, right? But like, even living in New York, it was like, oh, I'm an actor, but I'm just doing this. And I get it. You got to hustle. But the fact that you still were doing odd jobs in the space, like, that's incredible. Like, that's not easy to do. And in your book, you say you're always financially responsible, right? So you're always good with your money. It was always about you. You didn't have to rely on anyone, and you just kept enough jobs and work to build your financial stability, right? Like, that's incredible.
And I can't tell you how many times, especially living in LA, people will say, oh, so you're being taken care of? And then when I got married, they're like, oh, your husband, you've got your backup plan. I'm like, no, that's not, I have my business. He has his. And we're both very independent. And we came together, and we talked a little bit about this earlier. I can't imagine. And if I needed to depend on him, obviously we're a team, we're a couple, we're married. But I grew up, and it goes back to my mom. I grew up with, I took care of myself. And yeah, you take care of your family, of course, but there's that independence. I need that. I just couldn't live with myself if I didn't have that.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense.
It's just, that's how I grew up.
So just to that point, like, we talked a bit about this, the immigrant mentality, right? Yeah. Just, you came here, your mom came here, nothing was handed to her. She had a rough life. You saw that. You're like, I need to do better. I can't rely on anyone, right? And you built, like, that's incredible. So, like, even going through this, you basically operated like that immigrant mentality, like, you know, failure is not an option. I'm going to keep pushing. Like, it's just really cool to see that. And to see where you've been, and you're a good person, right? Like, you're genuinely like a sweet person, and you want to help people, and you want to connect. That seems like it's not natural from the outside looking into this industry. It just feels like it's very cutthroat. People want to step on each other's necks, and you're sitting here writing a book to help people. And even before the book, you want to help people, even if they, like, just hats off to you for that.
Thank you.
That's pretty awesome.
I don't understand how people don't want to connect. I know there is that competitive thing in people, but again, I feel like there's enough work for all of us that I can't imagine steamrolling or stepping on other people. And trust me, I've had it where people have steamrolled over me and, you know, used me in a way, it makes me sad, and it's definitely hurtful.
Right.
But you have to remember, like, I just have to get past it and go, that's just who you are and where you came from. And I don't understand it. It is hurtful, but that's just, for whatever reasons that are unknown to me, that's just how you operate.
Yes.
And so I stay away from that. As soon as I see it, experience it, it's time to move on. And I don't need that type of person in my circle of people in my life. It's time to move on. And you're going to have that. Again, we all go through it, unfortunately. I can't imagine ever being that person.
Right.
Yeah.
So you talk about small jobs as well, right? And I think this is important. You know, if I'm talking with my nephews or even my daughters or whoever it is, like, whatever your end goal is, you can't just jump there because you think, right? I'm going to be on TV. I'm going to be on a hit, Deal or No Deal. Like, it just doesn't happen. Talk to us about the importance of just doing small jobs, the ones that you think don't mean anything, but lead to other opportunities and open other doors. Like, just, how has that helped your progression to even get on a show like Deal or whatever your pinnacle was?
I think it's a stepping stone. You start out with the small jobs. I mean, I started doing background work in films in Chicago. I was even the perfume girl, the Jaeger girl in posters, like weird stuff way back in the day. But to me, it was, they were all part of the learning process and part of the experience.
Right.
And it's a stepping stone to get you to, you're not going to always stay there. And it's up to you not to stay there. You could.
Right.
But if you're doing the work and if you have that dedication, that persistence, that drive, you start going up that ladder and you're learning and experiencing and you're networking and you're building relationships. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with people. And if they see you're a good person and you're professional, they want to work with you again. And that's how one job led to the next. And that's, for me personally, that's how it happened along the way. You meet your agents, you meet your clients, you meet the different people, and it grows from there.
Right.
But it's up to you to put yourself in that place. A lot of people will be like, oh, will say, oh, you're so lucky. Like, oh, I just can't. No, it wasn't that.
Right.
I knew what I wanted to do, and I worked on that, and I put myself in those situations to get those opportunities.
Absolutely.
I'm sure luck comes into play too, but if I didn't do all those things, I wouldn't have had those opportunities. I could have sat back on my couch and did nothing and I'd
Absolutely.
Get nowhere. I'd still be in that same place.
Yeah.
But it's up to you to figure out, this is what I want. Okay, how am I going to get there? And that to me is very important, that I think a lot of people miss the steps in between. I've managed people too. So I've done the other side of it. And I've had people where they want to go from A to Z. All of a sudden, you know, they're newbies at this and want to be superstars. Again, I think it's because they look at what's on TV and they look at the fame of it all and like, oh, I want to be that person that I see. But there are steps to take in between to get you there. And you could get there if you do the work.
Right.
And that's what everybody.
And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
So aside from actress, model, everything, you're the ultimate networker. Right? Like you're yes. always out at events.
I'm a people person.
You're a people person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you are your brand, right? Like that's
yeah.
it. So the importance of networking and going to places, like you said, I don't feel like I'm going to sit on the couch. Like how important has that been to help progress and open doors for you?
Very important. And I learned that more living in LA. In New York, like I said, it was a different ball game. I never went out in New York. My going out and networking was the agencies, casting directors work, sleep, get up, do the same thing over. LA is a different animal. And times have changed. Now I've been in LA for the last 25 years. So the networking part of it is really important.
Okay.
But there's also the party aspect. So you have to be conscious of not getting caught up in all the events and this and the that. You have to remember, this is part of your business too. The networking and the events and all that comes in. But don't forget your day life of,
right.
you know, going to the agencies, getting to the auditions. Remember, this is what it's all about, is your work life. These other things could help you along the way, those relationships and bonding, because people do remember you and will consider you for things.
Right.
To just always maintain your professionalism and, not lose yourself, because LA, again, it is a different animal and it's, you could get caught up in it.
Right.
So just kind of rein yourself in. If you start seeing yourself detract and get distracted and you're getting caught up into the party of it all and that sort of thing, you have to really be aware enough, self-aware enough to rein yourself in and go, what is my purpose?
Right.
What am I doing?
Like, so you're saying in LA, again, from the outside, there is a dark side to this world as well, right? And there's
Absolutely.
People are always trying to monetize off each other, take advantage, false promises. Like, it's a dirty industry. Every industry has its negatives.
Yeah.
What are things that weren't essentially covered on this, on things to look out for? I know this covered a lot of the business side, but what are some things that you just need to be careful, because you can get caught up in, oh, I got invited to this person's party and there's drugs and they wanted me to sleep with this person and it just spirals out of, you know what I mean?
It spirals out of control. And actually, as of recently, a lot of stuff is coming out and
yes.
There was something on a lot of different things. I won't even get into it, but it's really sad at how many people know that this is going on and they did nothing and
right.
aren't protecting, especially their children. And so any child coming into this business, they need their parents or whoever it is that's helping them, supporting them, being by their side through it all. I was lucky. I had a sister that was 8 years older who went through everything with me. She was my biggest cheerleader.
Amazing.
And she was like my second mom. And so she was with me through it all. So I was lucky I had that.
Yep.
For any children getting into this, I really feel like you need an adult to be by your side. I'm going back to what I was just watching and I'm thinking how did this even happen? How were the parents there? How wasn't somebody watching? And especially on sets, they're supposed to have somebody,
right?
That's watching everything. A lot of people drop the ball. And,
so what is it? Do they just get blinded by the fame, the money, the glitz, and they're like, oh, they have the best interest of my kid. Cause you see it even in sports, right? Like it's just, it's sad. And like kids in general, and you see all this crap coming out, like you only have one chance for them to be pure, right? To protect them. And then to know years later that this child was violated. It's just, again,
we don't need to go down that path,
but it's just, it's sad. But like,
it happens. Yeah. And unfortunately that happens all the time. Sadly, glad it's coming out. And
yes,
hopefully that's a message to parents that do have their children into this business. Guide them all the way. Yeah. Do not leave their side. You can step out of the room and something can happen. So you need, I don't care if anybody tells you, no, we need your child in here alone. No, this is my child and that's it. I'm the parent and I'm protecting my child. And whether you have something nefarious going on in your mind or not, this doesn't matter. I'm being protective of my child. Bottom line, that's it.
That's great advice.
There's no way around it.
Absolutely.
And even if you don't have a parent, an adult, you need somebody there. I think they need that guidance.
Yep.
And even when they're older, people need support. We all need support at any age. There are things that happen to, you know, how many times you hear stories about women. We all need that support. And I always think even if it's your friend that can, it's kind of, I go back to, and I know this is really weird and going back to, like when you go out with your girlfriends or when I go out with my girlfriends, I will never leave my girlfriend alone if we're out and about somewhere.
That's your girl.
That's just who I am. I would never leave a friend behind.
Yep.
Even if I just met you through our pareja, our group, I would never, ever leave anybody behind, whether I know you or not, and your part. I am going to be protective of you because things happen.
Yep.
And I would be beside myself if I knew something happened and we were together and I could have done something to help you or protect you.
Yeah.
That's just who I've always been. And so I'm always with my friends. If they stray, I'm like, hey, where are you going? What are you doing? I may sound like a mom, but at the end of the day,
people need that.
We all need somebody to know where we are, what's happening, and just watch out for each other. To me, it's such a simple thing.
Absolutely.
Watch out for each other. It's not about being, you know, possessive or it's just watch out for each other. It's so simple. Avoid things. If you can, like that's just how I grew up.
That's great advice.
I've always done that with my friends. I've done it in the business world. I've done it in the, my personal life. You watch out for people.
Yes. And that's just a rule we should all live by.
It would be great.
So here's like this younger generation now, right? It's instant gratification.
Yes.
Right. It's, dating's become easier. You swipe and you date. Order food, you swipe and you get your food. You want to watch something instantly.
It's a Jetsons age.
It really is, right? So you have that quick access where everyone thinks it's easy. Everyone wants to be celebrities. Everyone wants to be famous. If they're working at a company, they want to be senior vice presidents. Like, there's no more progression in these smaller jobs to get there. Like, what advice do you have for people that are getting into the space that's a younger generation, like social media is coming into it and people think they're famous through social media and they deserve this. Like, it's got to be interesting from your seat seeing this, right? Like, it's a whole new wave that you never grew up with.
It's a whole new world. And it's a tough one too, because no matter what you say as an adult to somebody that's younger, they look at you like you're being my
Thanks, mom.
You know, yeah, I get a lot of that. I try to talk to them as a peer more than I'm just, you know, it's the way you talk to them. It's hard to explain it, but try not to sound like the mom, but more of their friend.
Yep.
Whether they listen or not, that's a whole other ballgame.
Like when you see, for example, you'll see a beautiful woman, right? She's showing it all out there. She's getting clicks. There's all these OnlyFans where they're making money now. Like that's short-lived. You know what I mean? Like, and again, I'm saying because I have daughters. It's like, don't, that cheapens who you are instantly, right?
If
that's all you're offering. Like, obviously there's jobs and stuff that require that. But if that's all you're offering, like, it's going to be short-lived, no?
And it's interesting because in the entertainment world, like one of the clients that was looking at me for, it was a Greek product and they wanted a host for their Greek line that was coming into the States. And they saw that I had a calendar out from a couple years back and they looked at my swimsuit shot, almost didn't hire me because of a swimsuit picture. And it was tame, nothing like what you see out there.
What's the standard now for,
Yeah, it was very tame. It was my calendar that I put out. It was during Deal or No Deal, like I think after the first Deal or No Deal version that was out. And they almost didn't hire me. Because of that. And they told me afterwards when we were working together, we're in Greece and we're working on this infomercial and they're talking to me and they're like, you know, we almost didn't hire you because... And I was floored. I said, really? You almost didn't hire me because of that, which was interesting. And this is something I've never talked about. The first person they went to was Maria Menounos.
Really? Okay.
And she turned it down from what I understand, what I was told.
Yeah.
She had a swimsuit stuff out too. She had been, I believe, FHM or some of those things too. But they wanted to hire her. And I get it. And she's a big name, I understand. But it was really interesting because the swimsuit stuff didn't make a difference to them.
Yeah.
But for me, they're telling me, we almost didn't hire you because of it. I'm glad they ended up hiring me. It was a great job. I loved working on that job. I ended up going to Greece to work, which was so incredible for me. And New York, and we shot here in LA. So it was such an amazing job. Loved it. But it was interesting to hear.
That's why, right?
But people do look at your social media. If you want to work in this business, they're definitely looking at your social media. I've been in castings where they're on the phone looking at stuff as I'm auditioning.
Jeez.
And they're looking on their phone and they'll just look up. I mean, and they'll bring up random stuff. Like I had one audition where they're like, oh, so you're married to an ex-football player. I was like, yeah. I'm like, how about my audition?
Yeah, right.
But it's funny. They do look at that stuff and that could make or break.
Plus, like politics, opinions, what you're putting out there, I'm sure that comes into play as well, or no?
Yeah, all of it comes into play. I personally don't put all that stuff out there. That's just me. Do what you need to do for yourself. I try to stick to what I know and what works for me. And that's, I stick to my work. And, I put some personal stuff like, going out to an event. I don't know, random little things, but nothing.
But you're not preaching or anything.
No, nothing like that. Do what you need to do. But honestly, be aware of your image that's out there that stays out there forever. So that's something to be conscious of if you want to continue working. I'm sure some people have continued to work without, being that mindful. But for me personally, that's what works. That's what I feel good about. I could put my head down on the pillow at night and feel comfortable with what I have out there. That's just what works.
That's right. And you were able to manage, right? Yeah. You control that messaging, that brand, that image.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so to all the young ones out there, just be mindful because what you're doing here today and that's out there, you don't know how it can affect you, and you might not want to be in entertainment. You may want a serious job somewhere else doing something else, a whole different career. But that can come into play and hurt you down the road. Somebody may not hire you because of what you put on social media. You're drinking on a video and doing God knows what. And that
I could tell you countless stories offline about...
it's
insane.
I've heard stories and I'm like, oh my God, that's horrible.
It's cringe, but when you're younger, you don't realize.
You don't think about those things.
Absolutely. Talk to me about Deal or No Deal. Right? Like this was a massive show globally, right? Like it was a global show filmed here in Hollywood.
Most of it was in Hollywood and Culver City. And then we also did shoot the reboot in Orlando, Florida. And then the daytime version we shot in Connecticut. actually, in New London, Connecticut, which is really cool. I love when we go outside of, you know, the norm. So it was really cool to, when we were in Connecticut, we got to stay in Mystic, where they filmed Mystic Pizza, which was cool. It was such a great little town. They were very welcoming there. And so
I lived in Stamford, Connecticut for a while.
Did you really?
Yeah, so we were all up and down there.
Yeah, it's a cool place.
I love it.
So Deal or No Deal, this must have just changed your career.
It changed everything.
Okay, so up until Deal and No Deal, you were doing great jobs, like big brands, you know, and then you get casted for Deal. How does that process even work? Because how many suitcases are on the actual show?
So there are 26 models, and then they have two alternates.
Okay.
So 26 cases, two alternate models that if somebody is sick or can't work that day, they put the alternate in. Also, those two alternates sometimes are the banker girls, where they have the hair slicked back. Do you remember Robert Palmer videos?
Yep.
Addicted to Love?
Yes.
It's that look with the hair slicked back, the red lipstick, the all black. Really cool look. But the daytime version, there are only two of us out of the 28 girls. So that was really cool because that was a whole different kind of show. It was played a little differently. But to be part of that was really awesome and incredible. And I was so thankful for all of it. And mind you, I had been working a lot prior, but it's a day here, a week there. It's a different kind of work. You're not working consistently on a long period of time. So when I booked Deal, I thought it was going to be just another job for a few days. And I remember the head guy at the production company, he said, get ready, your life is going to change. And I was like, you know, sure, okay, yeah. You know, I kind of dismissed it because I thought everybody wants their show to be a success.
Sure.
But once it aired, the ratings were through the roof. It was December 2005. And by January 3rd, whatever it was, we were getting the calls that, hey, we want to book you for a few more weeks, a few more shows, and it was like that for the next few years.
Jeez.
And we kept getting those calls, and it was really cool to experience because all of a sudden you become family. It was a sisterhood. You're working with these people all the time, and even the camera guys and the producers, they're some of my lifelong friends now.
Really?
So it changed my world personally and professionally. I always talk about that. It opened other doors. I got to guest host on Extra and Fox Movie Channel and a lot of different things. So, which I love hosting. So that for me was exciting and really cool to do. And again, it just changed everything.
Like the global reach. The global reach. So 3 years ago, I'm in Athens with my dad for 3 days, right? We were launching our office and we're walking in the lobby. I'm like, oh my God, Patricia, hi, right? Oh my God.
How random. I only knew you through social media.
Social media. We're like, oh my God, what a small world and nice to meet you. What are you doing here? Boom, boom, and passing. That's it. We leave and my father, who's 76 at the time, 75, off the boat Greeker, lives in Canada. He goes, I'll translate, like, afti, denine, si ti lorisi me tocara flo. Isn't she on TV with the bald guy? Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
I go, yeah, how do you even know, like, Deal or No Deal? He goes, nene, she's either case number 7 or 9.
I love that he knew that.
I swear to God, I'm like, okay, stalker. Like, pump the brakes, Angelo. But it blew my mind, like, and he was like, that just a small, but what a global reach. And I remember asking him, like, how do you even know? He goes, oh, we watch it, and your mom's always like, oh, that's the Greek girl. Like, my mom knows that. So, like, even culturally, like, it's such a cool thing, right? So like, talk to us. It becomes a full-time job for several years, right? Like it was a full-time gig.
It was amazing.
How does that even work when you get on stage and you're there? Like one episode, what are the logistics? Like you show up, like just walk us from start to finish. Like,
really crazy. A 1 hour show would take 4 to 6 hours to tape. Think about it, all the technical stuff, the lighting, you have an audience that they've got to bring in. You have the contestants and the family and then Howie and all the women getting ready. So it was a long process. Sometimes things happen in between. We did the commercial breaks too. So it's a long process. Yeah. And things happen. If a briefcase falls or gets knocked over, they have to start the game all over again. And that didn't happen often, but it did happen.
But why?
Here.
Because the case would open and people could see it?
Yeah. So you have to legally, it has to be, even if it didn't show, if you didn't see, because I actually was one of the people that dropped that case.
And you didn't get fired. Okay, that's good.
Thank God. It was actually on the reboot. And I couldn't believe my case got, I didn't even hit it. I think I was dancing and the floor was, it knocked it off.
Okay.
The case didn't open, but it had fallen down. And I guess legally you have to start over. So they have to take, everybody had to walk off stage. They had to take the cases, go backstage with the cases, reshuffle everything and start the game all over.
Were they booing you like in the crowd or what?
Everybody was really shocked. They're like, you're the OG. Like, really? Yeah. You knocked the case over? I was actually petrified. I'm like, oh, they're going to hate me. They're going to kill me. But funny enough, the contestant that was playing, he, his whole backstory was he has a black cloud over his head. And that was his thing. And they talked about it. This changed his luck and he ended up doing really well on the show. Like he did good.
Okay. So ended up.
Sunshine. I'd like to think that.
But, nobody else said it. You said it.
That's good. Of course. It's me saying it. But it really, he ended up doing great. So I didn't feel as bad. I mean, because I was feeling really bad. Right. I felt guilty.
That's great. You just cost the network.
I mean, think about
hundreds
that.
Of thousands of dollars.
It does get expensive. It's time consuming. There's a set schedule and anything that happens, it's like, oh, that's going to cost us a little bit more now to redo all that. But luckily it worked out. He played well and he went home with some money, which made me very happy.
Which is good. Is it exhausting though? Like 6-8 hours, like you have to be on, you're on camera. People at home need to see like energy from you. Like, is that exhausting?
Okay. So the other thing I didn't mention is, okay, a 1 hour show takes 4 to 6 hours, but then we're doing 3 shows a day. So we would work 18 hour days, sometimes 18 to 20 hours. So they are long days and being on set, there's in between, like I said, on commercial breaks, we have loud music. During the show, the audience members are really loud. And then once we're off stage, after our case has been called, we would sit backstage and it's high energy backstage too, because we have a TV set and we can watch the show in real time. So we're screaming at the TV as if we're at home. So there is a lot of high energy. So when we would finish after whatever days, how many days we were working, it was sometimes 3-4 days, I would go home and just the next day be in bed, not take any calls, put my head on the pillow, blanket over my head.
Drained.
And just try to like get that buzz out of my head. Because I wouldn't sit down. I was one of the people on set that if I sat down, I would never get back up. So I would keep going.
Right.
And I would just move around all the time. I wouldn't take my shoes off because you can't put them back on. It's hard. Like your feet swell up. And a lot of the girls would do that. And it was hard to get back up. So I was like, I'm not going to be that person.
So what is it? Just a lot of caffeine or like?
In the beginning it was, and they have, you know, the craft service. So we would eat and drink a lot of coffee. Over time, you start realizing this is not good.
Right.
And for the long haul, you can't keep doing that because you'll crash and burn. So I started personally, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do coffee. I'm going to do tea instead because my body feels better on that. And you don't crash with the sugar. I'm not going to have the taquitos today. I'm going to have an apple instead. So I started shifting how I would do things. It took me a long time.
Right.
Certain habits are hard to break. I'm a chocoholic. So I would be like, eating away.
Better than tequila shots in between breaks, right?
Good point. I would actually take chocolate and microwave it and let it, really random information here, but I microwave it and eat it like a soup. I was such a chocoholic.
Are you doing ridiculous. A cookbook next? Is that going to be your main?
I actually would love to. I just can't cook. I like to eat. Microwave your chocolate.
We got to try that.
Yeah, it's actually really good. I know a lot of people love putting their chocolate in their freezer. I'm the opposite.
Melt it. And eat it before it turns to.
Melted. I could go on and on about this topic because I am that. I've gotten better.
Right.
I feel like I could go to Chocoholics Anonymous.
Yeah. That's your guilty pleasure. That's fine.
Yes, it's good. It's good. I know. I've got any chocolate?
Yeah, I love, you know what? We will for next round.
No, don't do it.
So talk to me. So you have all this, like, your brado. I want to hear about Howie Mandel.
We got sidetracked.
I love sidetracks. This is amazing. Like, after you got on the show, when did you realize, like, oh, people recognize me? Like, I...
It would go in spurts. There were some people that would, kids sometimes would be like, oh my God, that's number nine. That's Patricia. And I was like, oh, how cool. They were, you know.
That's cool.
And then I had a few people that were like, my friend's kids. I went back to Chicago and they're like, Patricia's going to come over today. And they love the show. So they were excited. So I rang the doorbell. They opened the door. And the kids were right there and they looked at me kind of like, huh? And
you're in a big parka jacket. You're like, wait, what's up?
And they're looking past me and they're like, where is she? And they didn't recognize me because I didn't have the hair, makeup, the dress. Glitz. So they really were like, did you bring her with you?
Oh, geez.
And it was so funny. I'm like, oh, I forget. Yeah. It's a different look. I mean, I had the big curly hair on the set, you know, and all that. And
you went home and cried that night. Like, damn it.
I did. Yeah. But it's so interesting. There were times I would get recognized and there were times where people had no idea. Or if they found out I was on Deal or No Deal, they're like, oh, were you one of the producers? And to me, that's a compliment. Right. I love that. But it varied. There were certain girls or certain models that were recognized off set. They looked the same. They looked like that's how they looked off stage or in their personal life.
Right.
So it was a little different.
Okay.
But yeah, it was like night and day.
But it was night and day. You look the same. You're great. Let me ask you. So the business side of it, every time those 3-week increments or they kept renewing your contract.
Yeah.
How cutthroat was it? Were certain models cut and others
Good
brought
in? Good question. Have not been asked that before. Yes.
Okay.
So I would say about when we first came back, about a little more than half of the women that were on came back. They changed out some for different reasons. Some didn't want to come back. Some, I think they didn't quite grasp, like some people didn't get the show in the
right.
beginning. It was really new and they're like, I'm not feeling it or weren't comfortable. Like they microwave. Oh my God.
You're back to the chocolate. You see that?
They microphone, 6 models throughout each, when they're eliminating the cases.
Okay.
So some of the women are not comfortable being on camera. They're models. They're not necessarily actors
Yeah.
So that was a big thing. They weren't comfortable. So some didn't come back for that reason or they weren't, whatever it was on either side, whether it was the producers who let them go or casting, whichever.
Great diplomatic response so far, right? Versus they just sucked and they got
no. I don't think anybody sucked. I don't think you can, but maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was none of that. So they would have a lot of changes. The whole time, I mean, the first version of Deal or No Deal was 4 seasons. And they were casting throughout those 4 years.
Oh, wow.
They continued casting. So, I mean, if you didn't want to work or didn't care to be there or for whatever reason, maybe you got a show or something else, you can go because they had a replacement always ready. There were a lot of people. Once there was that height of the show, everybody wanted to be part of it. I had friends that called me up. They're like, hey, is there any way you can get me in? Or, and I would happily, I had a few friends where I'm like, hey, you need to see her too. And they would audition her. And it was up to them at that point. I had nothing to do with the casting process. But I was like, yeah, I will definitely bring your name into the mix. There's no reason why you shouldn't be here. Why not?
Even at that show, right? Where it was cutthroat.
Yeah. And they came auditioned. I remember a couple of the girls ended up getting on the show. They were there for a little bit. Some of the women didn't make it on. Again, it had nothing to do with me, but I was like, yeah, you're my friend. Of course I'm going to throw
That's
your
cool.
name in there. I would love to work with my friends. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was great to see all the women that came through. Some I knew, some I didn't, some I'd worked with before. Some are now still my close friends.
Right. And I see it through your socials too. Like it's a family, right?
It really is. It really is.
Did you, like in the team that kept on going season after season, like you're an OG there, right? Like people know you. When it came to contract negotiations, was it take it or leave it type of thing because there were people or did certain models have clout to demand more?
Nobody had that clout.
Nobody had that clout, right?
Yeah. Nobody had that clout. Everybody was paid the same.
Yep.
And each year they brought us back, the girls that came back, they gave us a little bit more. And then the newbies had to start where we started. So there was that. They're the only ones that the rate was different. So each year that we were there, they gave us a little bit of a bump up.
Right.
But there was no, you know, there was somebody else waiting in line that would happily take your job. So it was definitely interesting. And I have to tell you, when I started working on the show, I had a great agent who got me the audition and who I continued to work with through the first version of Deal or No Deal. And at one point he said to me, he goes, I don't think the money's that great. He's like, I don't think you should do this anymore. And this was, I think, going into second season. He's like, I really don't think.
Oh, geez.
And I said, I appreciate you saying that. But I really love my job and I love what we do. And I have a good feeling about it. And I'm going to ride the wave and stick it out. And, you know, I appreciate your feedback and I get what you're saying. And I agree. But I want to stick it out. One of the best decisions I made, trusted my instincts. And I talk a lot about that in the book, about trusting your instincts. Yeah. Because then I ended up getting the syndicated version, which the pay was better. And it was a great job.
Syndicated, sorry, can you explain?
So the syndicated version, it was a daytime version done a little differently. And it's all over the place on different networks, nationwide. And there were only two of us on that version versus the 26 models. Now it was two people and it was still Deal or No Deal played, but the contestants were holding cases instead of models.
Oh.
And then there was a spinning wheel. So the one girl was spinning the wheel. I had the ball, I would throw it in and whatever number it landed on, that was the contestant for the day.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So you made it down to two only.
So the two.
Oh, I'm sorry, bragging rights.
No, it was so much fun. Yeah. I was like, this is the best job
That's
ever.
Awesome.
I loved it. And it was cool to see it played a little differently. And the contestants were having a great time opening the cases. Now they were the models.
Right.
So it was really fun to watch it and see that version of it. And instead of an hour long, it was a half hour. And it was during the day that it was airing, I think at like 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So totally different. And instead of $1 million, it was $500,000. So it was fun all around.
No way.
But everybody loved the original.
Right.
Even when the reboot came, everybody just loved the original. There was something special about it. And I think the cool special things about the original was we had a lot of themed stuff. We had Star Wars. We had Sesame Street. We had people from The Office. Being from Chicago, we had Scottie Pippen and Mike Ditka on there.
Oh, really? I didn't. Okay.
So for me, that was really cool.
Big deal.
We've had Greek contestants on there, Chicago contestants. So, and they made it really special for a lot of different people,
right,
for a lot of different reasons. They didn't do as much of that on the other ones. There was a little bit of it. But on the original, I mean,
it was special.
We got to do some really cool things, experience some really neat things. We even had the texting version where you could win $1 million via text.
Oh, okay.
And so I showed up at the guy who won. I ended up going to Oregon where the winner was and knocked on his door and presented him with this big check, like surprised him with his lawn full of news people and band players from a school nearby. Like
That's
it was
so
this
cool.
whole big production. I'm like, how? And it was live and it was really, he was speechless.
So the show loved you, like to be the face of it going out there and presenting, that's a big deal.
I think I was game for anything. I was really excited and I love the interaction with everybody. I think it suits my personality. I just love people and I can, kind of a chameleon of sorts. Like I could be in any situation and just bond with people. And I love that. I love getting to know people. I'm inquisitive and I love just getting to know people.
Right, right.
And, I want to make sure they're feeling good and enjoying themselves. I feel like I'm a host. I think that's the Greek in me. I think that's just,
but you need your own show. You should be.
I love that idea.
But let me ask you, so how much on the show is scripted? Because there's banter, there's questions from Howie to like when he's asking you a question or something. Is any of that scripted? Because it's not just, you're not just sitting there opening the case. There's personality behind there.
Yeah, Howie is all about spontaneity. And that's what I love about Howie. He's very spontaneous.
Okay.
He's very much about in the moment. If there's something being said off camera, he's like, wait, don't say anymore. He's like, let's get that on camera in real time. He loves that aspect of it. And I love that he loves that. And it plays out well. He knows what he's doing. He's been doing this a long time. So, and he's quick-witted like that.
Oh, he's amazing.
He
he's Canadian. He's like, let's give him respect.
Oh, that's
you know?
True. That's true.
Serious question though. Have you ever shook in his hand?
I've tried to high five him.
He won't do it.
No, but I will say over time, he got more comfortable with us hugging him.
Okay.
I would mess with his head. I'm like, does this bug you? Does this bug you? So, you know, we've all messed with him.
Yeah.
But,
because it's legit germaphobe, right? Like he does not want to touch.
Yeah. OCD, germaphobe.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about it. He wrote a book about it. So it's legit. But I think over time, and not, you know, he's on AGT now for how many years, and he hugs and people hug him all the time. So he's more comfortable.
He's just showering in sanitizer in the back, right?
Like pretty much head to toe.
That's so cool. Yeah, he's hilarious, right? Like he's...
Oh, I remember him. Do you remember him back in the day with curly hair and the rubber glove over the head?
Absolutely.
So when we first got the job, they didn't tell us what it was. They said a game show, but they didn't say anything. Actually, they didn't even tell us originally that it was a game show. So I thought I was interviewing for a model's reality show and I almost walked out. I'm like, that's not my thing. But I'm here. Let me see. And I'm going to stick it out. I feel like you should always keep your eyes and ears open and see, you know, what it's all about before you say no to something that you're making up in your head. So I stuck it out. And once I found out it was a game show, I'm like, oh, cool, game show. You know, that's great. Modeling, it's not reality. I'm good. And then I found out Howie was part of it. A lot of people didn't know who Howie was, and I was floored.
Jeez.
But I was one of the older girls on the show, so I grew up watching him. So I knew his shtick. I knew his thing. I knew his comedy. But I found out a lot of girls were a lot younger and they're like, oh, they had to ask their moms, who he was. So it was cute. It was really cute, but
yeah, no, the guy, he's amazing.
He's great.
So he's doing America's Got Talent now.
Yeah. He's doing America's Got Talent. He's been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah, that's right.
He has his own production company. He has Deal or No Deal Island that he's executive producer, not hosting.
Okay. Podcast, I see.
A podcast. Yeah. So he's got a lot going on. He's a busy man. And I think that's part of his OCD thing, where when we were working, we would work all these crazy hours and then he would fly to do his stand-up comedy and then fly back to do our show first thing in the morning. So he was going. And I'm like, you're like the Energizer Bunny. How are you doing it? Because it's such a high energy job and to keep going.
Oh, he's the face, right? Like he's got to be on.
And that camera roll, like he was on it. He was so good and professional and on it.
How is it when the camera's off with him? Like, is it just like, all right, I'm normal? Like, how is that?
I would know when he was tired, but he would never say it or complain. He was not that person. I could personally tell over time because we'd worked together for so long. So I could tell Michael, he's a little tired today.
Right.
You can tell. But he never let on in any way. He never made it known, which was really cool to watch. Like, true professional.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Which I talk about in the book, like be aware of your surroundings and everybody that works on a set. Learn about the other aspects of the job because it's not just about you. It's a team effort. It's
Absolutely.
Not about the models. It's not just the contestants. It's not how it's everything collectively. Our camera guys, lighting, it all plays an important role.
Yeah.
And the more you learn about it, down the line, you might be like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do this side of the business or that side. That intrigues me more. And I think the more you learn, the better it is for you.
Expose yourself to everything. Right?
Everything. I think it's...
Absolutely.
Even if you don't end up doing any of those jobs, it's important to know the team effort that's happening and how a show gets put on.
Yeah.
If that's the field you're in, whatever field you're in, you want to absorb as much as you can and learn about it. It just makes you better.
But that's a good... statement there, but you even said right down to the cameramen. Most people wouldn't even mention them, but you know what? You care about it. It's part of the production. They're people too. Like it's the whole crew, right?
I loved our camera guys. We were great. I actually worked with them on other shows. It was
really
cool. I came on set and one of the models, one of the camera guys, it's like, hey, what are you doing? Oh my God. You know, and you already have this built-in friendship.
Yeah.
And it grows from there because now we're working together for another few years. And
he's going to give you more screen time. So it's good to, right?
I know what I'm doing. No, I'm just kidding. No, but it's really cool to have that. Just it, again, it becomes a family. It really truly does. And I know a lot of people say that with a lot of shows, but when you're spending that much time together, you're bonding.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good feeling. I mean, even down to our stylist and our makeup people, I'm very close to them. I love them. We're like family with them too. It's amazing how it works. We get together all the time and I love that.
Oh yeah. It's just a cool chapter.
It's a good feeling.
There's two more segments I would love to talk about. Yeah. You've been awesome with the time, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, happy to be here, chat with you.
Yeah, this is amazing. So two things, like I want to talk about just presentation skills, right? Being on camera, advice, right? And people could apply it to, you know, boardrooms and meetings, interviews, talking to your spouse. Like I think we could learn a lot from you on that. And then the last thing, just in general, what are your future aspirations, right? You've kind of covered a lot of things, like what's the next thing for Patricia Gotta. But I actually, totally side note, you cut your name.
I did.
What's your full Greek name?
So, and it's funny, I've gotten some flack for that.
Yeah, because I'm going to get pissed off right now. So let's hear it. What was your...
all right, bring it on.
Sure.
No, Karamuzi.
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 So you cut this a long time ago. If you were just starting
when
today,
I was 15, I cut it.
Okay. If you were starting today, would you cut it?
Yes.
Oh, even today?
Even today.
Okay, so why?
So I am proud of being Greek. I'm a very proud Greek. I talk about my Greekness all the time, everywhere, anywhere. I grew up without my father, and I just don't feel attached to that name in any way. He hasn't been in my life since before I was born. So... that was part of it. And so, and it bums me out because growing up, I would hear other entertainers that would cut their name and I did the same. Why'd they cut their name?
Yeah,
are they not proud to be Greek? I've never talked about that either. This is the first time that I'm saying
Let's
this
go.
On camera.
Right.
I feel very comfortable with you, obviously, because I feel like I've told you a lot
off camera. Clip it.
But it's funny because I've had people give me a hard time and I know I've been that person. And actually, when I was first dating my husband, I said that about somebody else and he's like, you cut your name too.
Right.
He called me out and I was like, oh, I did. I'm like, yeah, but my reasoning is a little different.
No, and honestly, all jokes aside though, I get that, right?
Yeah, like it was just, I didn't feel attached to that name. And so we're good. I like Kara. I even like it for a first name for a little while. I was like, should I just go by Kara?
Yeah. Kara, you know?
Yeah, like, Kara, why not?
I love it. Sorry, that was a total tangent question.
No, it's okay. And I have people that don't even call me Patricia. They'll call me Kara.
Okay.
And I don't mind it. I love the name Kara. And then I have people who call me number 9. I answer to that too. I can't tell you how many times I've had people go, hey, 9. And I'm like,
that's crazy.
I'll turn around. I will.
That's.
I take it as a compliment. Yeah. I love it. I think it's a great.
You know
thing.
What? If it's the reference and they're recognizing you.
Yeah, I think it's sweet.
Talk to me. So presentation skills, even if you're just modeling, you're still communicating with what you're putting out there, right?
I think anything we do. So what do you mean as far as presentation?
Well, So first of all, even on camera, let's start there. Like when you're presenting or if you're talking or if Howie Mandel's asking you a question on camera, like what are some, you know, pieces of advice on how to properly communicate. You know what I mean?
A lot of practice. I mean, for some people, I think it's more natural than others, whether you're in entertainment or something else. Honestly, even if you're in another field, I think it's worth taking an acting class or working with somebody that can teach you those skills of, because again, it's natural for some, unnatural for others, but teaching you those skills of being on camera and presenting yourself, or even if it's for a meeting, it can be intimidating.
Extremely.
I've been in this business for a long time and there are times my nerves take over. No matter how long I've been doing this, I don't know when it's going to hit. And sometimes I get more nervous about things that I'm like, why am I nervous? I've been doing this forever. And it's time for me to like, okay, hone this in. What's happening? You haven't done this enough or maybe lately or whatever it is. Work on it.
Right.
That's something you have to completely, maybe not think about all the people. You be present in the moment is basically what it comes down to. As soon as I find myself the nerves hitting or being self-conscious or having that weird fear, self-doubt, whatever it is, it's just being present in that moment and just thinking about what you're talking about. And not the judgment you think that's coming. I think we fear the judgment.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we get in our heads. Get out of your head and feel the moment. I find myself doing that all the time where I'm like, bring yourself right here in this moment. Be present.
So I'll support that. Before we're having a coffee, before we started this, your phone rang several times and you're just, we're still in conversation and you're a busy person. Like I notice these little things and I'm like,
you're the same way.
Same way. I'm adamant about it because if you're blocking off a certain amount of time, unless it's an emergency and you're just like, right. Wait, why are they calling three times? I don't care how important or special or busy you think you are, like be in the moment as much as you can, yeah. Right? Whether it's with people or meetings or dinners or kids, like that's a great piece of advice. And I'm just, and then back to the, you know, just presentation skills. So a few years ago, I did an improv class with my team. So I brought the executive team.
Oh, you did? That's great.
We did it in New York and it was more of like, okay, what's a cool team building thing? And we went to this comedy club in New York and it was like this 3-hour improv and people who are on stage from my team that are shy or, you know, from accounting, and they were forced to just kind of work together. And then we had to present certain things to our environment. It was one of the coolest experiences, right? And then we had some people where you're like, man, this guy or girl was just like, needs to be in drama and not in lighting. You know, it was just, it was really cool to see that. So we did a lot of that. And you know what? We should bring that back because it's just presentation and being an advocate for yourself. That's why, like, I'm just asking on, hey, if you're shy and you can't get your message across, nobody's going to hear you. No one's going to ask you, Patricia, do you think you deserve a raise? Do you think you're being valued? Like you have to be your own advocate, right?
You have to.
So presenting is a key part of it on just getting comfortable in all environments.
All environments.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to bring out the silly in you. We feel stupid being in certain ways. With practice, again, that's why I recommend to people like take an improv class or acting class or a coach or practice in front of the mirror, whatever it takes to get you to, or maybe amongst your friends, have your friends help you, whatever it is to get you to that place of comfort.
Absolutely.
The more you do it, the more comfortable you are. I mean, to give you an idea, I audition all the time, right? When I was on Deal, I wasn't auditioning as much. So I was on camera all the time, doing my thing, but all of a sudden the show was over and I was going back to auditions. I was petrified.
Really?
I don't know what happened to me. And I think I talk about that in the book actually, where all of a sudden I felt out of sorts. I just wasn't comfortable. I wasn't used to, I went from this high energy job to all of a sudden being in a room one-on-one.
You're like, whoa.
And it was just, I felt like I was a newbie just starting. And I'm like, oh, wow. I've kind of lost my way here. I need to get back onto my auditioning skills,
yes. My
presentation in this company, and be comfortable in this space with another person one-on-one on camera. And it was interesting because I was like, I just did what happened?
I was on every television set in America and now I'm, that's
and
crazy.
It was the strangest thing. And I noticed initially my auditions were not good. I mean, they were not. I could tell, I could feel it, but I had to get out of my head, stop thinking about it and be in the moment. And
right. That's,
I would literally have these conversations with myself walking out of the audition room and go, okay, I got to get, you know, freshen up, get back to it, get back on the horse. And,
right. And
then it was fine again. And I was back to my norm and doing my thing and booking jobs again. But, you know, sometimes we just kind of get, you know, out of touch or whatever it is, lost
totally.
In our way, or things happen that could get you off base or whatever.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
I can't find the right words.
No, I got you. But talking about rejection, so you have a career over 2 decades. Incredible. But for people to understand, like, it's not, you're going to hear a lot of no's in there. Like, what does that really mean? For every 100, like, take your average over 20 years. For every 100 auditions, how many yeses did you get?
Oh my God. I just had this conversation with my husband the other day.
Okay.
Because one thing, when I started in this business, I had a bazillion auditions and people started asking me that weren't in entertainment. They were like, well, how many auditions do you get a day and how many do you book? And I never looked at that. I never counted. I would write everything out. I have a schedule book that I write everything out. But I was never one to look at the statistics. I thought that would bring me back. It would probably depress me if I really looked at it and thought about it. But we were talking, I was explaining to my husband, like, when I was going through my audition process, I would get asked this all the time. But honestly, I just focused on the next audition, the next, okay, I got a job, next.
Right.
It was always about next. Moving on. And that's the way I looked at everything. So I don't know how many no's I got. A lot. That's all. A lot of no's.
More no's than yeses.
I got more no's than yeses. And then eventually over time, I got more yeses than no's.
Oh, wow.
And I think what helped was, listen, people can smell desperation when you walk into a room. People can smell or they could see it when you're not as confident or if you're nervous. It's telling.
Sure.
There are times you just can't hide it and people see it. Well, if you're doing it consistently and you're doing it over and over again and you're more comfortable, all of a sudden you're not thinking about it and you're not here and you're not thinking about the judgment, then you're going to do better. And then you move on and you're already thinking about the next thing. I was already thinking about the next audition and focusing on that instead of going, oh my God, how did I do? Oh my God, was that good enough? Oh, I could have done it that way. I could have done it this way. When you stop all the nonsense and just stay focused and continue doing what you know you should be doing, the yeses start coming. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, what was I even, thinking about back then? Like, what? You forget about
and
all
you're
that.
You're picking what your time is going to be and not.
Yeah.
Right?
And it really comes together. I think momentum helps. When you have that momentum, you're using your instincts and you remember rejection has nothing to do with you. Well, it could, but overall rejection sometimes has nothing to do with you. You never know what the reason is for getting that rejection. If you put those together and you keep moving forward and do your thing and do your best, that's all you can do. And then things fall into place. I truly believe that. Yeah. And I believe it because that's what I did all these years. And when I went off a little bit and did something different and wasn't as confident or didn't, keep looking forward, is when I noticed, oh, I'm in my head again. I'm not getting those jobs. I'm not moving forward. I'm not looking at things the way I should be. Or
tapping into your experience.
Tapping into all of it, that combination. And as soon as I go back to that, I'm good.
You're good.
Yeah.
You mentioned your husband.
Yes.
Right? I'm fitting in before we talk about.
No, go ahead.
So your husband, former NFL player.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
You're successful in your industry. He's successful in what he's doing. Just talk to me how that is coming together and supporting each other, right? In two different careers.
Two different careers, but it's amazing how much our worlds end up colliding. So he's been in the sports world forever. I've been in entertainment. And I can't tell you how many times our worlds have overlapped, but it's great also because they are different. Like, I'll hear him talking on the phone, doing his business. I've learned a lot from him and he's learned a lot about our world and hopefully he's learned something from me too.
We'll have him on next.
I would love to hear. But we always end up talking things through. Like, I can't tell you how much I used to always go through my business by myself for the longest time. I would talk to my sister, but my sister didn't know this world. I would just, she was my sounding board. She was my soundboard.
Sure.
So, but with him over time, he would give his take. He's a businessman and he would give his take. And I appreciated that. Sometimes I agree with him and I'm like, oh, I didn't look at things this way. Okay. And there are other times where I said, nope, trusting my gut. This is how I feel. I needed to hear somebody tell me something else for me to go, no, I think
absolutely.
I got this.
Yep.
So we're good like that. I feel like at this point, we both work a lot from home. So now it's like we're across from each other. Yeah, his desk is there and my desk is here. So we're really,
you can't divert his call when he's looking at you. You're like, shit.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. But again, I feel like we've learned a lot from each other and our worlds come together in some ways. And it's really been great for us. I think over time, we've been together 20 years. So, it's a learning curve. You're first starting to learn each other. And then over time, it's not always smooth sailing all the way in every aspect, but over time, like, we get each other, we know each other, we're both very independent, but we're also both team-minded. So we know when to like, okay, you got this, or okay, I need you.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that between us,
which
is great.
Yeah.
And I love who he works with and the people. I've gotten to know all his people that he works with. He's gotten to know my people. And sometimes, there's crossover in some ways. Like, I know I might hear something in my world that they need something or someone from his world. And so we collaborate in that way too. Actually, we just did a podcast with him. I don't think it's aired at all, but
awesome.
He had his podcast and I was on there. And
amazing.
Yeah. So it was interesting being interviewed with him, his coworker. And
your husband's name is Noel?
Noel Lamontagne. Noel. Call him Noel.
French background?
French and Polish background.
Okay.
So that's awesome. Very French name, Noel Lamontagne, the mountain.
Because he's a big guy. So he's like a mountain.
He is a big guy. Very big guy. Used to be bigger when he played. Yeah. He's lost like over 100 pounds.
Get at it. He was a linebacker.
He was an offensive lineman.
Okay. Jeez.
And yeah, so when I met him, he had just shrunk down. I remember people giving him a hard time. And I was like, why does everybody keep talking about your weight? What's happening? But I found out that he used to play and he had just dropped a lot of weight. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
He stopped eating 10,000 calories a day to maintain.
Yeah. I have to tell you, our first few dates, he was eating the salads and I was eating the burgers and the pizzas. And I'm like, what's
going on?
I'm like, this just... we need to swap food and I should be eating the salads and you can have my burger and pizzas. But yeah, over time, he's very healthy. He's very, it's interesting going from all that weight to nothing. I mean, he's had a lot of injuries and surgeries. So losing the weight definitely helped him.
Yeah, I got to meet him at some point.
You have to. I think you guys would get along very well.
That's awesome.
Very well, yeah.
Last segment. Talk to me about future aspirations.
Future aspirations. So, with moving to Florida, I just moved and I feel like I'm going back to basics and starting over. I think I might have said that earlier. I'm excited because I'm open to opportunities. I'm very excited about the book because this has been my baby for a long time. There are other things that are coming into play that people are approaching me with, more about talking to younger people, teaching, which I'm intrigued, but I still am working as a model and actress and host. And I still need to venture out in the Florida world of casting directors and agencies. So that's where I'm at right now. Right now, I'm really focused on the book.
Of course, yeah.
But future-wise, I'm thinking of different things. Still entertainment and all aspects, but I'm kind of excited of the not knowing, not figure. Like I love riding the wave and see where it goes and what feels right and kind of taking it from there. Like, and I've done that a lot throughout my career where I say, I'm not sure and I don't want to pick just one thing. So
it's working out for you.
And actually in the beginning of my career, people kept telling me you have to choose one. And I was like, but why? I have so many interests and why? I want to do everything.
Good for you.
And I got a lot of flack for it, but I knew, again, it goes back to your instincts and maybe you won't do everything 100% well. But look at, there's so many entertainers now that it's okay to cross over. How many people are singers, dancers, models, actors, doing it all? They have companies, they're
alcohol brands.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I love that. And I just want to see where it goes.
Amazing.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
And talk to me. This is basically a full-time job right now.
Yes, it is. And I'm loving it.
Right? Bringing it to market. How have you been marketing this and where can the listeners go and support this? I got mine on Amazon, just FYI.
Yeah, it is on Amazon and some bookstores. I know it's out in bookstores as well. And honestly, I've been doing all the promo stuff myself. I haven't gone through a publicist.
Okay.
I talk about publicists in there and maybe at a later time, but I'm enjoying doing the PR marketing. I love that stuff.
Your
I do
DNA.
It for my friends sometimes. So I'm enjoying it, doing it for myself. It is a lot of hard work.
Right.
But... I'm enjoying it because I'm meeting different people. I'm going to different towns. I'm here in LA right now.
Book signings, right?
I was in Chicago. I have book signings over the weekend. I'm going to New York soon. I'll be talking on a summit there.
Awesome.
How to get unstuck, which is really cool. So these random things are opening up and I'm loving it. And more to come, definitely.
Absolutely. We're going to put all the links up.
Thank you.
Right.
I appreciate
Continued
it.
Continued success. Oh, you're amazing.
You are amazing.
Thank
I love
you so
that
much.
We finally have gotten a chance to 100%. Sit down and have a long conversation.
My dad's going to be excited, right? Number 9 with the bald
Say
guy.
Say hi to Baba.
I will. Baba, you heard that, right? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Invigorate Your Business with George Strombolis. Please hit the subscribe and like buttons and follow me on all the main podcast streaming channels. Also, please share your comments when you can. I appreciate your help in expanding this network to a worldwide audience. Until next time, stay invigorated.